Joel Kotkin is a futurist, one of the foremost urban development specialists in the nation, author of the new book, The City, A Global History, and he joins us on the live line. Good morning, Mr. Kotkin, and thanks for joining us.
Well, good morning to you.
You're somewhere out on the West Coast. Did you avoid the tsunami warning?
Well, I'm in the San Fernando Valley. I think a hell of a tsunami to get here.
Yeah, I guess you're pretty safe on that. Well, all right, just to give you a little background, I don't know how familiar you are with Tulsa. We just passed one of the most regressive sales tax in Oklahoma, if not American history. It's over $500 million for Vision 2025, or so they're calling it, Vision. It's actually government getting in the role of private development and private industry. They're going to build a giant arena. We don't know if they can build it for the $140 million with the cost of steel and cement and PVC piping, but they claim they can. 18,000 seats. Also, a convention center renovation comes to about $200 million. Then they built pools and community centers in all the surrounding cities, even though we don't have pools in, what is it, 18
of our 22 pools
here
have
in the
water.
City of Tulsa. But we've got pools and community centers.
We have lights in the interstate you can't be turned on because you can't pay our
yeah.
light bill.
And we got a Jazz Hall of Fame, and we got an Air and Space Museum, and I think you get the picture.
We have a shortage in our police department because we can't hire new ones.
But that's what we did and called it Vision 2025. And with overages, I suspect after 13 years, they're going to collect over $1 billion. And what is it for? Primarily an arena and convention center. I've been saying for quite some time that not only are we being taxed to death for these things, but they're not going to work. Most people say I'm a naysayer. Well, you're an expert. You role modeled all the cities. We're not the first to do this. What do you make of a significant regressive sales tax to build an arena and convention center? Is this working for anybody else?
No. In a simple word, I mean, there are certain investments that, you know, sometimes are not too bad. You know, a baseball stadium in a big city with a popular team maybe marginally is not so bad, maybe a slight negative, but convention centers are a joke. I mean, convention centers are, I mean, I don't know, you know, it's a good thing we don't live in Roman times because they'd be having gladiators and trying to attract people. I mean, the convention center business, if you read any of the respectable reports, like from Brookings, it's pretty clear that convention business is pretty much flat.
And why? There's a great reason for it.
Well, for one thing, you have lots of other ways of getting together. You know, electronically and otherwise, there is simply just not that much business in it. And also, what's very interesting is that most of the conventions or a lot of the growth is in smaller conventions. You know, the kind of thing you might do in a retreat in the countryside or connected to a significantly large hotel, which is all private. These convention centers, it's almost like the Cold War. It's like cities are going and trying to spend their way to prosperity. You know, it's like the Russian and the United States during the 50s and 60s, you know, spending on nuclear weapons.
Hey, Joel, it gets even worse. We're making a $200 million investment in an 18,000-seat arena. All we have is not an NFL team, not a college team, not an AF1 team. We have an Arena 2 football team that draws 3,000 to 5,000 fans, and we have a Central Hockey League, not IHL, not NHL, Central Hockey League that draws between 1,500 and 2,000 fans. And we have no concerts that are out here other than small concerts, and there's already four other different places they can play at. And we're building it downtown where 76% of the people say they don't feel safe and want to go, and in a landlocked area where there could be no commercial development around it. Now how smart does it sound?
Well, it sounds absolutely brilliant. I mean, what you see, but the thing is that I guess what I see is this is happening all over the country. I see Phoenix is doing the same thing.
But they have the Phoenix Suns.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that they are expanding their convention center. Now, look, if you go to a convention in Phoenix, you go there in the winter to go play golf and play tennis and swim. Do you want to be in downtown Phoenix in August? I don't think so.
Well, what is this push nationwide to revitalize downtown? That's all we heard during the push for this tax. We've got to get downtown.
Downtown is everyone's neighbor. This arena is going to lead to restaurants and entertainment districts and shops and businesses and people living.
It's absolutely imperative that we have a thriving downtown.
Well, you see, here's the deal. There's been this Kool-Aid that's been drunk all over the country, and it's basically you're not a real city until you have a really thriving downtown. Well, here's the reality. The very concept of downtown, and I make this point in the book, The City, didn't even make it into Webster's dictionary until the early 1900s. It was a phenomena of the early 20th century, before the automobile, and in the period of industrialization in which this kind of concentration made sense. Today, business and residents are moving to the periphery. So why would you make a huge investment in the place that's depopulating and losing jobs?
Let me word it a two different way. I grew up in New Orleans. You know what we call downtown? The CBD. You know what CBD stands for? Central Business District.
Right.
The need for us all to be in walking distance of each other as we work no longer exists.
And here's the deal. If you want to rebuild a downtown, the way you should approach it is a neighborhood. And in other words, you take a look at it and you say, okay, why do people not want to live or work in downtown? It usually has to do with crime. It usually has to do with lack of certain housing options. It usually has to do with the schools. Now, look, one can have an argument between liberals and conservatives, a very legitimate argument, about how much money should go into public schools or public safety.
And what their goals and what they do with that money.
Right. I think that's a legitimate argument. But what I see happening is instead of putting money on those things, they're putting money on this sort of, you know, bread and circuses approach to urban development.
Do you know that there's a bigger argument going on right now? Never mind. Steel is up 60%, cement is up, PVC piping. I'm doubtful that they could even build a Cesar Pelle-designed arena at $140 million, let alone none of this addresses that it'll lose $3 to $5 million a year, and where's the operating budget for the city? You can build anything with capital money, but then you got to operate it with budget money, and if you don't have money for police and lights and interstate and fire and roads, you know, where are you going to get money to run this arena? But all that aside, do you know what the biggest argument over is? What the artwork will be in the inside.
Well, you see, what we...
Doesn't that speak to everything in your book?
It does, and it speaks to what I call in the book the ephemeral city, in which, generally speaking, what's happening in American cities is a small group, very often tied to arts foundations, to downtown property owners.
Our midtown elitists.
Right, the construction industry people who would benefit from it, the architects, and I teach at a school of architecture. This group of people are driving the agenda, and I blame both the people and to a large extent, and the business leadership for not saying, you know what, we need better roads, we need better schools, we need more public safety. Why is it that one part of town where relatively few people live will get this huge investment, and meanwhile neighborhoods, including working class and minority neighborhoods, are ignored?
I would kiss you on the lips.
Well, no, forget
you
that.
You
would want to write a sequel to your book. Guess who the number one and two contributors to Vision 2025 were? Manhattan Construction and Flintco. They ended up becoming Tulsa Vision Builders. They got all the building for this project. Who were the number three and four? F&M Bank and Bank of Oklahoma. Guess what? They got all the financing for the bonds being sold for it. So there's your business community tie-in. And then what are we doing? Yes, we want to revitalize downtown. So we think an arena and a convention center is the way to do it, when in reality, what's it about? The things that government should be doing. Safety. Public safety, number one. Infrastructure, roads, number two. It's the good old-fashioned way, and nobody wants to do it. They want to do it with a painting.
And I think that's exactly right. And I think what you're seeing across the country is the enormous waste of money that's going into convention centers, art museums, things like that. Look, these things, particularly like art museums, historically have been built by wealthy people. The way you do it is you grow your economy, and then some, you know, rich guy decides at some point, like Paul Allen or the Disney family here in Los Angeles, decides, I'm going to build a museum. That's how it was done in New York. What do you think all the great art museums in New York, how did they get built? They got built because some guy got really rich, and when he got older, he decided he wanted to have an art museum.
Why?
That's the way it should be done.
They're driven by legacy. They want their name to live on. They want to give something back to the community. You know what we had? The Schusterman family offer a $10 million matching bribe if the voters passed a $500 million tax plan.
And
could have built something with the $10 million.
I mean, and here's the issue that I like to draw out when I deal with these issues. I did this in Phoenix. I said, you got to spend $1 billion on this stuff. Are you going to build a luxury hotel? I mean, the city of Phoenix are actually building the hotel, the city itself. It's like something out of the Soviet Union. And what happened is I asked people, okay, are there clinics for poor people who are sick? Are there enough police in this neighborhood? Are there roads that have potholes? Are there schools that could use computers? Start saying, you know what, the public good is something which the political class has to make a decision. What is important, what's not? And what they're going for is this is the late era of the Roman Empire. We have no idea about where our priorities should be. There's no, you know, you always have some bread and circuses, but a great leader focuses on the fundamentals. I happen to be a middle of the road, you know, sort of old fashioned Pat Brown Democrat, as we would say here in California. I'm in favor of spending money on infrastructure and schools and cops and, you know, things that matter. And then that provides the base where the private sector and the entrepreneurial class can create wealth. Instead, what we're doing is we're building these, you know, these bread and circuses. And I think what a lot of it is, some of it is pure greed and self-interest. There's no question that that's a big factor. Then there's kind of, well, I guess you're sort of a family station, so I won't use the words, but let's say a certain envy about a certain part of male anatomy. That they feel that they have to...
Keep in mind our county commissioner's name is Bob Dick.
Okay.
He's the one who led this whole thing, so be very careful, Joel.
Okay, I will. But here's the deal. This is what I find absolutely astounding, is that you have this group of people, and what you find out very often when you sit down and you talk to them is they actually feel very insecure about who they are because they're afraid that they go to another big city and the other big city has a professional team, has a bigger arena, has a three-block area, what I would call a Potemkin Village that people walk around in. Here's a classic case, Cleveland. Now, Cleveland always gets written up, oh, Cleveland's revived. It's got all these stadia, and it's got this little district in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. A, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is falling apart. They can't even get the stars to go there because nobody wants to go to Cleveland. And the city has the highest percentage of poverty of any city in America. After 10, 15 years of this same kind of investment, you go to St. Louis, which isn't so far from you.
Right.
And in St. Louis, they've built every kind of ball stadium. I'm surprised they haven't built a lawn bowling stadium.
Well, it's the final season for Bush, as a matter of fact. Yeah, and they have the arch, and so our leaders come back and say, well, we need a 21-story Indian. I mean, it's all the, you know...
What happens, Mr. Kitko, when you get to the point, Kotkin, I'm sorry, when you get to the point where you're catering to these trendy, hip kind of people and the bohemians and the gay population? And what happens to a city when you build everything around attracting that sort of individual?
Well, first of all, I mean, the great irony is that many of you know, that those kind of people
spend money.
Well, they spend money, but first of all, if somebody is interested in the arts, no offense, if that's the most important thing in their life, they're not going to Tulsa, they're not going to Oklahoma City, they're going to New York, they're going to San Francisco.
Well,
that's
true too, right.
I mean, that's just the bottom line. The second thing is that we forget that people without children and gay people, you know what, they get older too. And you know what they start doing? They start moving to the suburbs. and they look for safe neighborhoods in the city where they have a backyard and where they have a little bit of privacy. So this whole notion that you're going to go after this 25 to 30-year-old, the terrible thing that happens to them is they get older. And when they get older, either they get married, they start a business, they slow down.
Or they've earned enough money, they start becoming conservatives and Republicans. Talk Radio 1170 KFAQ, Joel Kotkin joining us. He's an urban development planning specialist. He's out with a new book. Everybody in Tulsa, Oklahoma should read it. It's called The City, A Global History. And Joel, just some quick pro quo. These people have been told by their county commissioner and by their mayor that if we build this arena and convention center, and I would add to that the local newspaper because they have a financial interest in it, sure. One of the leading media firms, Schnocky Turnbull, because they have a financial interest in it, the construction companies, everybody, we've been all beaten over the head. We build this arena and convention center.
They will
come. Downtown is going to revitalize. Concerts are going to come. People are going to start going to arena games and hockey games. Restaurants are going to appear. Clothing stores are going to reappear. Downtown's going to boom. And if downtown booms, it's everybody's neighborhood. The whole economy's going to explode. Give them just in a nutshell, I mean, this isn't me saying it, and you're certainly not even on the same political team as I am, so I didn't just go out and find somebody that would say what I did. You're an expert in urban planning. Is that going to happen?
No. I mean, you can create a certain amount of jobs and activity if you build these things and a certain number of people come. I mean, you can make the simulacrum, the appearance of a downtown. But let me tell you something. I was in downtown Phoenix where they had spent billions of dollars. And except when the Suns are playing, it is empty. I mean, and it has got every large structure you could ever ask for.
If we have envy of anybody, it's Oklahoma City, and we're envious of Bricktown. Guess what? When there's not a game or a concert in Bricktown, it's empty. So, I mean, this notion that an arena will revive... Now, keep in mind, Joel, you're going to love this. We built ours in a landlocked area. There's not even room for parking, let alone any business to develop around it. And it's lined, if it's lined by anything, by the city jail and the homeless shelters.
Well, there's also no evidence that stadia have any sort of development around them. Actually, generally speaking, these large structures, and architects discuss this many times, these large structures are actually things that drive people away from the surrounding area because, you know, they're forbidding. What really works much better is a lower rise and a organic growth of a downtown. I mean, I believe downtowns around America can come back, but they could do it organically. You think of New York City, which, of course, is unusual in many ways. But what really turned New York City around was the reduction of crime under Giuliani.
Mm-hmm.
That changed everything. If people feel safe and then entrepreneurs come in, and see, the other thing that's really odd is what's going to make a downtown work? It's going to be having what the rest of the city doesn't have. Otherwise, it's going to be having the eclectic business, the interesting shop, the ethnic restaurant, the stuff that maybe can't go someplace else. You need to have relatively low prices for people to go in. So, you know, you find in many cities now, you want to get a good ethnic meal in many cities, you go to the suburbs because the downtowns have been taken over by real estate speculators. And so what? So you now have the 249th version of some chain that exists, you know, in almost every other city because they're the only ones who can afford to pay the rent.
You've been to Tulsa, haven't you?
I've been to Tulsa several times, yes.
What are your thoughts?
You know, my initial thoughts is that the place has a really good bone structure. I mean, that tremendous architecture, which, you know, the Art Deco, which is just great.
We have a river.
You have a river that's certainly something that you could build around. I have a big one on public open space. I think that's something to look at. But you got to work on your economy. I mean, you know, it's fundamentally, if you're going to get educated people to either stay or move to Tulsa, you have to have something to bring them. What the census analysis shows us and what the growth analysis shows us, and this is true all over the world, ultimately people will go to places where there's economic opportunity and where housing is affordable. That's what's happening around the United States today.
Not where there's an arena, not where there's a Jazz Hall of Fame, not where
casinos are taking all the money out of the pocketbooks in a non-destination state.
No offense, but I no more associate Tulsa as a world center of jazz than I do Cleveland as a world center of rock and roll.
Thank you. Someone finally said that.
You mean people are going to come from all over the world just to see Cesar Pelle's rendering from the outside? People are going to come all over the world to see our giant 21-story Indian? They're not going to come from all over the world to come to our Jazz Hall of Fame?
And I'll tell you another thing. One of the biggest problems with Tulsa, and this is something that many mid-sized cities face, it's hard to get there. You know, there are very few direct flights. It takes forever. If I want to go from L.A. to Tulsa, it takes me more time than getting from L.A. to
New York. Yeah, absolutely.
Because, you know, so if the city fathers were really interested about attracting businesses that operate on a national and international basis, maybe they ought to think about airline connections.
Absolutely. Well, we tried to start our own airline, and we did it with tax dollars as well. That's a whole other story, Joel. You would have a field day. I'm telling you, you should come and spend a week with me in this city. I will spawn 5 books for you. Joel, but give us a sense of, because this is our biggest frustration, do these politicians really believe in what they're doing? I mean, in other words, I've studied myself approved. You've studied yourself approved. Where wisdom comes from beyond years by role modeling other cities. In other words, we're not the first to do lottery, we're the last. We're not the first to do casino gaming, we're the last. We're not the first to do a Syntax on tobacco, we're the last. We're not the first to build an arena and convention center, we're one of the last. All right, so, but all that aside, these people selling it and selling it like they believe what they're saying, do they really?
Well, you know, you'd have to ask them. I mean, I think most people at some level feel that they're doing the right thing. And, you know, I mean, what I find is what's sad to me is that the broad-based business community, which should be speaking out for different priorities, and I also will talk about, you know, other people, you know, people in the minority community, people in the labor movement.
They can't hear, though, because they got the Metro Chamber in their back pocket. That's the problem. They got all the Rotary Clubs. They got all the Kiwanis. They got all the clubs in their back pocket. That's about it. The business community didn't even speak against gaming. That would be its ultimate demise. Didn't even speak against a tobacco tax, which cost the convenience store industry 33 to 40% of its business.
because you know what you have is you have this breakdown. I think this is part of the breakdown of the middle class and the tradition of American politics. You know, whether on the left or on the right, what you lack today is this sort of independent middle class view of the world, which scrutinizes public expenditure. The conservative may say you're spending too much money. The liberal may say you're spending it in the wrong place. But that voice is gone. And I have to say also, a lot of the blame goes to the media. The media is almost always at the center of these things. In almost every city, the biggest boosters of these things are the media companies, which also, by the way, happen to be located in downtown and have most of their real estate.
And have vested interest, right, as the Lorton family. Boy, you nail it all. The name of the book is called The City, A Global History. One of the foremost experts in urban planning, Joel Kotkin, saying what I've been saying for now 3 years, but I'm just a negative naysayer and I should get the hell out of here or maybe even have a bullet in my head is the emails I get. All right, so it's nice to know I'm not going crazy and none of this is going to work. I don't know. I guess it's just good old-fashioned. Nobody wants to talk about it. But it's jobs that bring people to cities. So you better start looking at tax reform. You better start looking at workers' compensation reform and lawsuit reform so people have more money to spend so businesses can expand. And then it comes back to prioritizing government the good old-fashioned way, education, roads and infrastructure, and public safety, police and fire. Not arenas, not convention centers, not jazz hall of fames, not air and space museums, not pools and community centers in surrounding cities. Joel, I really think you ought to make another visit. I think we got another hit book for you.
Well, you know, the problem is this. I can tell you, you know, I speak around the world on these issues, but let me put it this way. If I was going up and saying to audiences, yes, you know, the key to everything is the arts and convention centers and your downtown, I'm sure I would be invited to Tulsa numerous times.
That's so true.
But the problem is, like the people who really are, I mean, I'm doing very well with the speaking, but it's very, very hard to go into a town and make these kinds of arguments because the power structure is so committed to this stuff.
Yeah, because it's not sexy. Are there any cities fun to talk about, right?
We're already 4 minutes late for news, but Joe, are there any cities that are doing it right?
Well, I think under Bob Lanier, Houston did a lot of things right. He really focused on neighborhoods and infrastructure.
Public safety, which was huge for him.
Public safety. I mean, Lanier, and I think Bill White's basically pretty good as well. That's a city, I think, that's really focused more on the basics. And they've
stolen a lot of our local businesses, by the way, too.
Well, you know what? And people go to Houston because, you know what? It's one of the few cities in America where commutes have gotten shorter. It's got a very good pro-business climate. It's got affordable housing. It's got two very functional airports. You know, it is. You know, you take a place that by natural by its natural environment is not the most attractive place in the world with a not very nice climate, and they've turned it into what has really become a world-class city at a time when all these other cities, and of course the classic case is New Orleans, which had that position and should have that position, has continued to decline.
And gave it away.
And tell me what New Orleans is invested in. It's been bread and circuses.
Mm-hmm. And casinos.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean. I mean, this is unfortunately, it's the Roman Empire revisited. That's why it's important to study history.
Absolutely, or it's destined to repeat itself. Joel Kotkin is the author of the new book, The City of Global History. I won't give you, they can learn more about you actually as they get the book, but we're very honored that you would take the time to be with us today. I really do think you have a case study here and what's wrong, and people can get a great vision of what's going to work and not going to work, and hopefully from a different messenger it'll make sense.
The sad part of it is there are so many case studies in so many cities. You know, you could spend the next 30 years cataloging it because it is just this insanity happens almost everywhere you turn.
I guess there's no chance in talking to you coming here and being mayor.
No, I'm pretty. I like where I am, but I really think that this is something that ultimately there's got to be some voice in the business community, some voice in the policy community that's willing to challenge these notions because. I did it in Phoenix, and I've really started a really good debate.
Well, so far it's me and two city councilors. My life's being threatened, and the other two councilors are being recalled. So the picture's not very bright for Tulsa, Joel, but thanks for speaking the truth with us this morning.
It was my pleasure.